All right, I think we're ready to make a start. Ta, can you just signal to me? You can hear me? Ta? Yep. Okay. Good evening, everyone. It's great to be back for term one for the series of the Schmooze. Last term we did just my father and I, and we felt that was starting to get a little boring, so we decided we'll bring some other people on board. Tonight, I'm extremely excited for many reasons. First of all, we're going to discuss my great grandfather, Rabbi Eloy, who many of you know, who was a rabbi in South Africa and Berea Shul and many other things. And I've heard a lot about him from many, many people in Sydney who come from South Africa and who were close to him and who told me what an incredible person he was, but I didn't really know him, actually. I was very young when he passed away, and I didn't know him very well. So I thought it would be a good idea to interview two of his grandchildren and perhaps get some more information about what a special man he was. That's the first reason why I'm very excited. The second reason is who our guest is. I'm very, very excited to have Aviva Parush with us here tonight. Aviva was for 2 years my second mother in Israel. I spent a lot of time at her home when I was in Israel for 2 years, and have incredible memories. The last time you saw me, I was 19 years old and single. Today I'm 29, married, Kanai Nahara with three kinderlach. So Mirtz Hashem, when Corona's over, we'll definitely pay you a visit. I'll have to show you my family. I would love to visit you. So it's really great to have you on, and let's get right to it. If anyone on Facebook or on Zoom has any questions to ask, please put it in the chat and we can make this more interactive. So first of all, just to get to know our guest a little bit, Aviva, can you just introduce yourself and just tell us a little bit about what you're doing nowadays, what's going on in Israel at the moment, and just.
Thank you very much, Levi, Reb Levi, for inviting me to this special event. Over the last couple of months, and we've been with Corona, unfortunately, but one of the good things is that I've become more involved in Bina, and once a week I take part in your mother's wonderful Sicha Shir for the ladies. And I was very touched when your father phoned on your behalf, or I don't know whom, to ask me to join. I'm not, as opposed to you and your father, I'm not an orator in any manner, by any manner or means, but I'd be happy to share with you a very special person today. A bit about me. Firstly, just to add to a bit of the background, to maybe tell people that Zaida Rabbi Eloy had two daughters. They should be well and healthy. Your grandmother, which we call Auntie Winnie, Mrs. Winnie Garari, she's the oldest, and my mother, Batya Kurtzdag, who's living now in Eretz Yisrael. I'm the daughter of the younger daughter, and your father, who I may say in just by the way, was always my favorite cousin, and he's from the older daughter. I live in Eretz Yisrael, so I'm bringing you greetings from Yerushalayim. It's the day here, not night, so if I get a bit mixed up, you'll understand. Unfortunately, things aren't so amazing in Israel at the moment as far as Corona. We're still in lockdown, unfortunately, with a very high increase in the amount of Corona people that are sick. We send them a refuah shleima and hope that things are going to improve. I myself am a teacher. That's why I was just a little bit late. I'm still teaching from home. The schools are closed. We're teaching over Zoom, long distance. And I also coordinate a master's program for Haredi women in a teacher's training college in Yerushalayim. Baruch Hashem, I'm a mother of four, got one married daughter, and that's it in a nutshell. So things have also changed since you were last here,
Right, the last time I
10
saw your
years in
married
Eretz
daughter, she
Yisrael.
was, I think, 12. So, yeah, we all got a little older. So let's start talking about Zayd a little bit. I'm going to direct the questions to both of you. Any of you can answer this. Let's just, first of all, people knew him as a community rabbi, but obviously you knew him as well as a Zayd, as a grandfather. Was he a family man? Did you see him often? Was he the type of person that was at work always and you never sort of saw him? Or was he sort of very involved in his children and grandchildren's lives? How would you describe that?
I think you're the guest. You go first.
No, but you're my honored cousin. So you start and I'm going to add.
Okay, so I'll just say, look, I one of the things I've often thought about, and I thought about it actually when I first became a grandfather a number of years ago, that I never actually really appreciated the fact that I know that Azeda was tremendously busy. He had so many people to attend to in Johannesburg and then abroad and so on. He did so many things, and yet he used to come visit fairly often. I remember he came to us quite often on Motzei Shabbos particularly. And we never felt that he was busy. Like, he used to come, I know I have a memory when I shared a room with my younger brother, Remy, and he used to come. We were always sent to bed a bit earlier. And then he used to come to our room and tell us a story. That's even when we were kids. And even when we were older, whenever we were with him, if he was busy, he was busy. He'd let us know very clearly that he was busy. But otherwise, we went to visit him at home or he came to visit us. It was like nothing else existed. That's what I remember. And he's just... He made time for family, but not just made time technically. He made time like with focus. That's my memory.
I want to add even more than that. You spoke about it when he made time to be with the family. But other than that, firstly, he was very family conscious. Absolutely. I don't know if you remember, but every single birthday, this is the girls, the granddaughters, we always got a flower arrangement sent from the florist with a note in it. I don't know what the boys got. They got a gift for sure. But there was always, he used to double your age, send a check of double your age. And the girls got a beautiful flower arrangement, which was something special. I'm talking from a very young girl. Imagine getting from a florist a flower arrangement at the age of 8 or 10 or whatever. But more than that, even when he was busy in the office, and I used to visit a lot when he was in the office, and we always went in to say hello. Other than if he was in the court itself, in the Besdin, in the middle of a court session, if he was just in the office, there was nothing more special to him than seeing his children or grandchildren. His face just glowed. And no matter where he was, you had to go up to him and give him a kiss. Other than being in the shul itself, he didn't give you a kiss in shul itself. But if you met him out of shul or in the office or whatever, we always went up to him. And he was so excited to see his grandchildren. And would always introduce you to who was around. This is my granddaughter, my this and that. Very, very proud of his family.
Can I just add just a question here, just so people should know, and I don't know if I know the answer to this, actually. Can you just describe to everyone his official positions? Like, he was a rabbi of a shul, he was involved in the Beis Din. What exactly was his...
He was a senior dayan in the Beis Din. He was there for many, many, many years. He actually, a lot of the structure and infrastructure of the Beis Din was due to him. He established it many, many years ago. And he was a rabbi of a very, very busy shul. Just to give you an idea, I remember in the heyday when I was growing up, Sunday was his busiest day. I'm sure he remembers that. The morning was spent at the cemetery for tombstones and things like that. The afternoon was spent with chuppas. And in this busy time in Berea Shul, there were 150 weddings a year. That's wow. Prime time. So you can imagine... What kind of busy, and so he had really had two very senior positions, and he was involved with so many different tzedakas and just so many helping so many people and widows and just taking care of a lot of people, a lot of things.
So here's an interesting question. I'm not sure if you have an answer for this, but this is just an interesting thought. There are people. Sorry.
The story. Sorry, yet you say about family.
Go on.
I wanted to add a story I was thinking, and I think it's. Connect with something else that I'm sure is going to come up. Do your family, and I think your father might remember this and how important family was to him. When your parents moved to Australia, correct me, Rabbi Michal, if I'm wrong, Moshe, your older son, was born pretty much at the beginning of your shlichus in Australia. And he was born Erev Pesach. And I remember Zayda, that feeling that you were going to have the bris with no family around you.
That's right.
And he got on a plane, and I'm sure it's going to connect with something that I'm going to say later about his personality, but it was so important to him that you as a young couple and in your new shlichus will not be alone for your first son's bris, and he traveled from South Africa. It was Erev Pesach, in order to be there for the bris.
Not only that, thanks for reminding me, not only that, he was, first of all, he couldn't see very well. It was very hard for him to travel at the time. He had a cataract, was before his operation. Second of all, you couldn't get a visa. It was very difficult, a tourist visa to Australia those days for South Africans. And he was a very determined person. When he decided he's doing something, he's doing it. And it was going to get done. He traveled by himself to England. He had to go to the High Commissioner there or something to get a visa. He came there on a public holiday. He had to somehow get hold of the chief rabbi, Rabbi Jacobowitz, who got them to open the office. It was a public holiday. They granted him a visa, and he arrived here the night before Bedikas Chometz, two nights before Pesach. And the next morning was the bris. I see on the list of participants, we have my good friend Richard Balkin here. He'd remember that visit very well, because I remember him picking up Zayda and he spoke to him a lot and so on. So yes, he spent Pesach with us. It was the most amazing, amazing Pesach.
Wow. Amazing. So many, you know, he was obviously a very public person and many, many people knew him. Some people are different in public than they are in private. Like, they give off sort of a certain personality, and then when they're, you know, at home, they're sort of different. How would you describe that about him? Was he different to family than he was to everyone else? Would he sort of change when he was not around a big crowd, or was he sort of the same? Just an interesting type of question.
I don't know. It's interesting to see what people would say about it. I actually think not so different. He was a very real person. I mean, when he was in official capacity, he was in official capacity. He was giving a sermon. He was officiating. And it was a very formal formal rabbi that way. It was in those times. But I think in terms of personality, I always felt he was, when he was family, he was a Zayde, he was a grandfather, but I always looked at him as just a very, very real, sincere person. He was always that way. I don't know what Aviva thinks about that, but.
No, 100%. I agree 100%. The only difference might have been he had no poise about him. He wasn't, other than when, I don't know if you remember, he used to wear a top hat when he officiated. He had a long tails and a top hat when he officiated in weddings or public things. But no, he was very, I think he's going to also join many aspects together. I think I must have been 16 or 17, I can't remember. And Zayda got an invitation. He had already lost his wife, our late Bobba had passed away. It was already a few years before that. He was a widower for quite a few years. And he got an invitation to a very fancy banquet of a good friend of his. And the invitation came to Rabbi and Mrs. Aloy. Now, when you think about it, he could have been very, very hurt and insulted from such a thing. Everybody knew that he was already a widower for many years. And it was very like a lack of sensitivity. What's this business to send an invitation to Rabbi and Mrs.? Instead of getting upset or getting angry or whatever, he took it in good spirits. And he said, you know what? I got an invitation to bring along a partner. I'm going to this banquet together with a partner. And he asked me if I'd join him to go with him together to this banquet, which I think also connects to your previous question, which shows this connection of his very high position and his very family. And because we were so close, it was amazing, this idea that I was going to be with my Zayda. I remember it even said on the invitation that it was very formal, black tie. And he said to me, he said, I'm going to arrive in a black bow tie. And he did. And I, of course, got dressed according to this very fancy event. And that's how we went out. We went to this banquet together. And he introduced himself that he's brought his granddaughter as his partner. And nobody ever knew about what was written on an invitation. And that's the way he was. He was just very, very warm and a people's person so much that it made no difference, of course, other than when he was in the pulpit or officiating in something. But he was very, very much the same.
You muted, Levkel, you muted.
That's right, I'm muted. All right, there we go. I know this is probably a hard question to answer because it's hard to pinpoint such things. What would you say was the most special thing about him? I know it's probably hard to define, he was such a special person, but what would you think, sure, he had many special qualities and many amazing things. What was the most special thing about him, unique thing about him?
Oy, that's a very hard question to answer because there's so many. you know, I could talk about his love of learning, I could talk about so many different things, but I think one of the things that stand out for me, and I've often thought about it, and maybe I think about it a lot because I don't think I'll ever be like that, because it's very hard to reach that level, but I, you know, we can all try to learn from that. It's a very, very important thing about the empathy. What I mean to say is when he went to someone's simcha, it was like his simcha. When he helped someone through a challenging time, it was like his challenge, which is why, that explains why people felt, as you would know, you've heard this many times from people, how everyone seems to think that someone in their family was his best friend. And that's true. It's not actually a made up thing, because he made people feel that way. And just that go the extra mile to help someone, and to not just help someone because you have to do it as a duty, but to actually really put yourself in them and really feel for them and celebrate with them and mourn with them. I think that's the most, but you know, people talk about that, and we always talk about it. We talk about it there's a concept in Chazal called Noisa Ba'ol M'Chavera, that you actually experience it with your friend. You put yourself in another person's shoes. And I think for me, that was probably one of the most, I mean, there are many most amazing things, but that was one of the most amazing middos, one of the most amazing personality things that I think was incredibly special.
Viva, do you want to?
I agree with that 100%. I'd add, well, just in general, his Avas Yisrael, his love for his fellow Jew, no matter what or where. But Adafka, I think of something else that stands out very strong, and your father mentioned it before, but I think it was his determination. I know there's a concept, Dafka and Chassidus, you'll have to help me here, but if you want to get somewhere and there's a wall in front of you, what's the concept? Milachatchila Areba, that if you can't manage to go through, you find the way, you'll jump over it, you'll carve a hole through, you'll... And when Zayda wanted to do something, and I think that story of the breast, because you spoke about it, Reb Michal, from Australia when he came. But I remember being at home. He was staying by us at that time. I remember what went on in order to get onto that plane. It was impossible to get a visa to go to America in such a short while. Was simply impossible. Whoever would hear of that story would say, forget about it. There is no chance. It's not going to happen. You can't. And when Zayda wanted something or needed something or felt that it was important, there was nothing, but absolutely nothing that would stop him. And my father, he should be well and healthy. He was also a Dayan together with Zayda on the Beis Din for many years. They worked together. And I remember the stories he used to say when it came to issues around the Beis Din, if they had to found, for example, found out if somebody was indeed Jewish and there were no papers in order to prove it. And Zayda, if he knew that he had a link, there was nothing that would stop him. He would go to graveyards out in I don't know where in order to see if the person's grandfather, father was buried in a certain place. You couldn't stop him from anything. And I think that story of the breast, the more you've told a few details of how he got to Rabbi Jacobovitz, made him open up the office to get, he had a cataract. That's where I think my first connection with him was. I used to escort him on some of his trips overseas. The first one was actually to your parents' wedding. I was 14 years old and I was Zayda's escort only because of his bad eyesight. But he had was Erev Pesach, there was nothing to talk about. He had to fly himself and go through England and get this visa. And there was nothing can stop him. That, I think, was one of the strongest things that I remember about him.
Well, I see that there's someone, the video is not on, but it says over here, Moshe Kurtztag. I'm going to assume that that's Uncle Moshe, Rabbi Kurtztag. So I want to welcome my great uncle, Rabbi Kurtztag. And maybe Auntie Bessie's there as well. So it's a real honor to have them on as well. Going from what the most special thing about him, if you can share, I know it's probably also hard to pinpoint because I'm sure there were many, one of your most memorable experiences with him. I'm sure you spent a lot of time with him. I know, Aviva, you spent a lot of time with him, and Tati, I'm sure you did as well. But I'm sure there's some experience that stands out, at least one of the most... a memorable experiences, if you could please share that with us.
I had many, but one clearly stands out, and I'll never, ever forget it, never. And in fact, only as I get older do I understand the unbelievable greatness of this experience, because given the position that he had and the busy schedule that he had, but he took me after my bar mitzvah, as he did my older brother as well, and he had a trip with Esti, I think, somewhere along the line as well, and he took me for a trip. We left actually 3 days or a few days after bar mitzvah, and he took me for a trip, and for 4 weeks, not like four, a week, for 4 weeks, just me and him. He took me to New York for 2 weeks to see the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Then we went to Europe, where this is typical him. He had to go to Paris for a day and a half because he had like a sort of a stepbrother there, which he had to see. I think his name was Lazar Sosnovich, if I remember correctly. Then, of course, we had to go to England because it was very important to see the Buckingham Palace and all the things. And then we spent an amazing Shabbos in Switzerland.
I didn't know you were in England.
Paris, England, and then Switzerland. We stayed in Grindelwald in a resort area. We had an amazing, amazing Shabbos. And then we ended the trip with a week in Eretz Yisrael, right? But the conversations, that, first of all, I got to witness also how he interacts with other people. He always had plenty, wherever he went, there were people he had to see, people he had to take care of, people he had to think. While we were away, we were there for one of the Tanais, one of the fast days. And he told me he loved, I remember that very clearly. That was the first time he told me this. He told me he loves fast days, because he doesn't have to waste time eating, he can get more done.
That's amazing.
And then we were there for a week in Eretz Yisrael, including Tisha B'Av, just to get to see him, how many people he knew, how many people gave him unbelievable respect and covered, and also to spend the time with him. I mean, we stay in hotels, it was just me and him in a room, and I was a little kid, sometimes I'd be a little bit wild and crazy, I was only 13, and he used to enjoy it. He would laugh, and they would tell me stories, and we would talk, and it was just the most incredible, incredible experience, which at the time I didn't understand the greatness of it. I mean, I loved it, but I just took it for granted. But I put like, it just, yeah, there's no way to describe it. I mean, I'm going on and on, but that would be for sure the thing that stands out most for me.
Wow. Aviva, how about you?
The same here. It's those trips that I went on within the first, somehow that first one, which I mentioned to your parents' wedding, was the first time I did it. And in order to get to America, there wasn't a direct flight, or I don't know, but there was a stopover in Holland. And one of the things that your father also mentioned, Zayda had to get a lot in. You had to chapzach, you had to manage to do a lot of things together. And I remember that we arrived in Holland, and here I was, all of 14 years old. It was a long trip, and I was exhausted. And he took a restroom for us. Because if you went with Zayda, you had to get the best. You had to get the most out of it. You didn't stint on anything. He wanted to have this amazing experience. And he took us to a restroom in the airport. And I remember going into this hot bath and falling asleep. All I wanted to do was sleep. But no, Zayda had made an arrangement with a taxi driver that in the all of 1 hour that we had in between the connection, whatever, he took a taxi to drive around in Holland, so at least I should see Holland in the drive around. And I remember he woke me up, and all I wanted to do was turn over and go back to sleep. I couldn't understand now how. And he spoke to me, so he said, "Nay, nay, mein Kind." He says, "Get up, get up. It's going to be worthwhile." And of course, I did it. Zayda wanted, and of course, it was an amazing experience. And likewise, afterwards, we spent that time together in a hotel when we were in America. And as your father said, just to see his interaction with people and. It was more than interaction. Even when you were on the plane, wherever you ever knew him, wherever Rabbi Eloy, afterwards the biggest, the most important passport you could have as being his grandchild was to say that you were Rabbi Eloy's granddaughter, because everybody knew him.
Wow. Talking about experiences with him, did he ever learn with any of you? Did he ever study Torah as a sort of a chavrusa together with? Did he make time to learn with you? Is that a thing? Maybe you can talk about that.
So, wow. I know we have limited time. There's so much to talk about that. So I think, and I'm sure that's true for Aviva as well. First of all, you have to understand who he was. He was a person that learned in many, many famous yeshivas in Lithuania. He loved learning. He always made time to learn for himself. And he loved sharing. He loved teaching. If he saw a good vort, a good chap, he would always share it with someone in the family. I remember him coming often to our house, and he would share it with my father or with me or with everyone. He would share a good chap. And he was like, he used to love it. He enjoyed it so much that if there was a punchline to the vort, right? I remember he would always repeat the punchline like a few times because it was like he wanted a relish in the chap of the vart or the story. He wanted a story for everything, a vart and everything. But he learned with me a lot, first of all, formally or informally. I'll tell you two things. First of all, I'll tell you one story. So after Baba, after our grandmother passed away, so he was also not so well at the time. He had a thing with his eye. It was quite a tough time. And then he was staying with us at the time. And then he wanted to go back to the shul. So he had an apartment near Berea Shul. So he made that every Shabbos, a different grandchild would actually spend with him. And I was there the first Shabbos. And I was in what they called Matrik, HSC in those days. And I needed to learn Tanakh and the book of Zechariah. So just a few weeks after Baba had passed away, and he knew Tanakh very well, among other things. And the Friday night, he went back to shul. He actually felt better because he was back working, because when he worked, he felt better. And then we came home. We just ate, the two of us together. And then after, he says, okay, let's start Zechariah. Let's start Tanakh. And he taught me how to learn Tanakh. With Mitzudas Dovim, Mitzudas Tzien. And we learned the whole chapter of Zechariah, the first chapter. And he was like on a high. It was just that, I'll never forget it. Like, it was just amazing. Ogilanta Perek Tanakh. He was so excited that we learned the whole chapter of Tanakh. And just before we went to bed, he said to me, let's review the whole Perek. And we learned through the whole Perek again. Right? So, and that was just like, I think it was more the example of someone who is just so excited to learn and never stopped learning and never stopped that enthusiasm.
How old were you at the time?
I was like 17, 18, somewhere around there, right? But I mean, before that, I learned with him a lot. I mean, he often learned with me and he learned a lot of very informally. Also, every time we go, I mean, on the trip, he would tell me stories, he would tell me my salach, he would tell me all different things, right? As he would with the other grandchildren as well. I'll just tell you one very beautiful thing that I have from him, a tremendous memory. In fact, I think I printed some of it by Yom HaMitzvah. So he knew an unbelievable amount, but he never wrote anything down. We always all complained about that. And one time I decided, I was in Australia already and I was living here and I wasn't a pulpit rabbi yet, but I had Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. I had like a position that I was going to go somewhere and give drushes. So I thought it's an amazing opportunity. So I called him up and I said, Zaid, I got a problem. I have to make drushes, but I don't know what to do. So maybe you can share with me ideas about Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. He said, and it was hard for him then already. He was older and it was taka hard for him. He said, for this, he'll definitely do it. And he wrote me faxes a few times, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, for different things. He wrote me faxes with Vertlach. So those are the things I still have. And then those are beautiful things. But yes, the short answer to it, he loved to learn. He loved to share. And whether it was formally or informally, he shared a tremendous amount. I'm sure Aviva has a similar experience. Well,
I want to add, I think that the boys, the grandson's got a lot more on the learning level as far as Gemara and things that girls don't really study. But the thing about Zayda's learning, number one, what your father said, this idea of chazer and chazer, to repeat and repeat, and only that way you really, really know it. And his knowledge in Tanakh, I mean, you could start a pasuk and Zayda would finish it off wherever, and if it was a master after of somebody and he made a mistake without even looking inside, he knew exactly where it was. But another thing about his learning was how thorough he was. And I remember Dafka as a schoolgirl, also when he was staying at us, my parents were overseas for something and I needed also to study for a test. And when you started telling your story, I actually got a little bit nervous, because if you were before matric and you had to finish a certain amount of material by that Shabbos, I said, oy vey, asking Zayda wasn't a good idea. Because what happened, you would come to him, you were a student, you knew that you had to get this material done, all you wanted to do was get it over and done with and finish. But it didn't work like that with Zayda. Because if you came to ask him something, you had to understand, what's the book of Zechariah? And where does it come in the Tanakh? And who was before and who was after? And what's the perfect? Now, you just came to ask one small question because you've got a lot of material and you have to move on. No. It was so thorough. You got to hear. In the meantime, he remembered a story. And for sure that what you learned with him, you never, ever forgot. You remembered it forever. And he always joked and said, I even remember my mother saying that she'd never ask him anything with her schoolwork, because exactly that. You went to ask him something small. You just wanted a little answer. And he started giving you a whole story. You couldn't... And he always joked and said he could never be a teacher, because he'd never be able to cover the ground that has to be covered. He knew so, so much, and he was able to give it over at whatever level, a young kid, an older person, but very, very thorough.
You know, just you just reminded me, you talked about, you know, Chazrin and Chaz, you know, talk about reviewing and being thorough. He once told me that, you know, people today, they talk about zgulas, like good omens. Like, for example, I don't know, it's a, if you're a tzaddik at a bris, it's a zgula for long life. If you do this, it's a zgula for being wealthy. So he told me, a zgula to gedenken is to learning. He says, do you want a zgula to have knowledge? You should, as a good zgula, he says, is to learn, to sit and learn and to review. You muted again.
Later. Yeah, that's great. So, I mean, he's as you mentioned a few times already, he was very, very well known for his sensitivity, his avos yisrael. However, being in a leadership position, a true leader, always has to stand up for something which is unpopular. You know, we're coming close to Purim now, and at the very end of the Megillah, the story of Purim, which we read on Purim, it says that Mordechai, the expression that the Megillah uses, you know, Mordechai, one of the heroes of the story, says that he was rotzoi l'roiv echov. He was beloved from most of his brothers, most of his colleagues. And the commentaries ask, why most, why not all? And one of the explanations is that a real leader, there's always going to be someone who doesn't like you. Because if everyone likes you, it means you never stand up for anything, right? So you have to have most people that like you, but there always has to be someone who's upset about something. So I've only really heard about his sensitivity and his avos yisrael, but was there ever a time where you saw that he stood up for something, and even if it meant that he was going to be unpopular and people would get upset? Because a lot of times people with that sort of nature who are very kind and very nice, they find it more difficult to stand up strong for something which is, you know, for their principles, for their values, and upset people. Did you ever see him, not for the sake of upsetting people, but just for the sake of standing up for the truth, even though it meant that he might not be liked as a result?
So I don't know. Probably the truth, I don't know if we could do something radical here. I see Uncle Moshe is on here. Is there any way to unmute him?
I don't think it's him himself. I think that it's in the house for my mother to listen to, because I'm going to share something, and I would very much like him to have been, but he's unavailable at this moment.
Okay.
Because I know there were things. I don't know what the details are. I mean, there were things in the base den and things in the rabbinic that he had standards, and there were standards, and he defended those standards very strongly. I mean, the one or two things that I could share, but I can't share, because actually there were stories that he told me that I don't think would be appropriate to share, but there were definitely things. In other words, I guess what I'm trying to bring out is as follows. His avos yisrael and his sensitivity for others was not from, in the minutest, from a weakness. It was from a strength. There are people that always are kind to other people, but it comes from a strength, because they can never stand up to other people. He was a very disciplined person. He knew how to create boundaries. He once told me that he has taught that also depends where he is. I'll give you an example. He says that when he's home with the family, he's home with the family. He says in the Beis Din, when he's in the office, he's got time for anyone, even the biggest nudnik. But you know, there were things that were communal stuff, that if leadership needed to stand up to something, he was very strong. He wasn't a weak person at all. But details, you would need to have someone that worked with him in that sphere to actually answer that question.
Well, I'm definitely not the person that worked with him. But I'm a daughter of a person that did.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's fair or it's right. But just in a small way, firstly, to answer in general, the question is no. There was nothing the worst thing for Zayda was to cause machloikas, to cause vibes. He was, in that sense, very a politician. He'd always found the way that it should be done in the best way to be, so everybody should end up being happy. And here I think that and I had a very close relationship, my father and him, around the Beis Din. My father, as I said, was together with him for years and years in the Beis Din. And I always say it's got to do with my father's name, Moshe Emes, was Tarosa Emes. My father can be the one that, if something's not, he's very forceful. And Zayda was exactly the opposite. And they had this very interesting working relationship that, of course, as your father said, he'd never, ever, didn't mean that if it was something halachic that he would chas v'sholom give in on, or absolutely not. But he had a certain, I think you call it a skill. I'm sure that as a rabbi, you can say yourself, Remichal, it's a skill to be able to do that and to find the way to do it and to still remain so popular.
Yeah. So I think
it's, I don't know, it was a talent.
No, so I think
because he was absolutely loved no matter what.
100%. I'll tell you, I mean, I won't tell you details, but I'll tell you a cute story. Once told me about quite a famous rabbi that came to South Africa that spoke. And he said something about yeshivas. You know, Zeta was very into learning and he had a love for learning. And that's why also he loved to help people. In South Africa, a lot of people would come to collect for yeshivas. And Azeda would help them a lot because he had a very, very strong feeling for places that learned Torah. By him, that was very, very precious. And therefore, he went out of his way to help people who came to fundraise for yeshivas and so on and so forth. And there was once quite a well-known rabbi who came to South Africa and made a speech in public. And in the speech, he said something not so nice about some yeshivas. And Zeta got up after him and in public reprimanded him. But this was his skill. I think is what Aviva was trying to say. He reprimanded him and there was no breakers even for 5 minutes. He had a way of doing it that he could be very strong and they remained best friends right away. It wasn't like they made up. They didn't have to make up. It was just, he said his piece, but he said it strong, but in such a way that it was fine. You got away with it.
Wow. Can you maybe add on a more personal note? Did he ever reprimand you? Did he ever, he was a very loving grandfather, but did he ever tell you off? Did he ever discipline you? Did he ever, or that wasn't his,
no, wasn't his really. Problem? I think only one little thing, I'm sure he would say the same thing. There's only one thing we were never allowed to do in his house. Like he was tidy and organized. Like we could never ever change his order. Like if you messed up his papers or something like that, that wasn't a good idea. But I don't remember. I mean, there was just such love there. It was unbelievable. Even as a kid, but once in a while I went to his house for Shabbos. So when Baba was still alive, I went there for Shabbos as a young kid, I'm talking about. And I don't know. We didn't think of misbehaving. You didn't misbehave around him. It wasn't because of fear, just because you didn't want to displease him anyways. But I don't think so. I don't remember ever.
No, me neither. I think that there's an age difference between us here. So I remember him. He was already older. I don't have so many memories as a younger kid, but I think it connects to what I said earlier, that his grandchildren were just the light of his life, that there was no such, he didn't see himself as being the discipliner. He just enjoyed the time together. You had to just have a good time together. So I don't have any such memory at all.
I just want to add one random little story, just for fun, because it's not really relevant to what we're talking about, but because I mentioned before about he was a very organized person. It was, for a time in Berea Shul, there was a chazan called Dudu Fischer. You're smiling, you know what I'm going to say. So Dudu Fischer came to South Africa quite young and he became incredibly close. He was the chazan of Berea Shul and he became very, very close with Zeta to the point that even afterwards, I remember when I was in Eretz Yisrael for one of the, I think it was Shua's wedding, he came to the wedding to sing and all. He was like, they were very, very, very close. And like Zeta was like a mentor to him and he became almost like a son. Like, so when he would come, if he would ever drop off in Zeta's house and he wasn't there, he would go into his study and he would rearrange his desk and then he would leave a note, guess in Hebrew, Tanachesh Miayapo, like guess who was here. And then that was, he was able to get away with it. Otherwise, no one else could do that. Just a cute story.
It was even more so. It happened, I think, after Zeta was involved in a car accident. I think that's what you were talking about soon after Baba passed away. I was very, very small then. And he was in a car with his leg. He was in a wheelchair. And I remember Dudu used to drive him around still to the chasanas or whatever. But even when he was in his wheelchair, but just to show the kind of character and how at home Dudu Fischer felt with him, he brought him home after a long day, but he wouldn't leave him. Even though he couldn't get up and do, he walked in, he made a big mess in his study. And with a big smile on his face, he said goodbye. So that he said to him, let's see now that you're in a wheelchair, how are you going to tidy this up?
That's amazing.
He had a good sense of humor. Zeta had a very, very good sense of humor. He liked to tell a joke. He enjoyed a joke. He knew how to laugh.
Yeah. Can you maybe comment, both of you, on his Yirat Shamayim, on his fear of heaven? So, obviously, a very, very popular rabbi, as you said, and very beloved. Was he very frum? Was he very careful about mitzvahs? Was that something that he stood out in? Did he impart that to you as well? Maybe you can comment on that as well.
So, I mean, the way I think about it is like this. First of all, again, his study of Torah was incredible. He loved to learn and the importance of learning. I used to often watch him daven. You know what he was? He was a person who was knew Shulchan Aruch very, very well. He was a Rav, he was a very, very Talmid Chacham. But he was like old fashioned in the way he didn't publicize it, he didn't make a big deal out of it. It was just very obvious. It was part of his life. Like he would daven, he didn't think, it was just he would daven word for word, very beautifully. I remember him davening Shema Esra. Sometimes we'd come to house and it was late and he hadn't managed to go to Mincha. He just got to the wall, he would daven Mincha, but like it was beautiful, just, you know. And it was natural. It was like halacha to him was obviously of great importance. But it wasn't sometimes like, I don't know how to say it. Like sometimes you see people make like it was pashtus, as I say in Hebrew. It was very, like, not sincere, ordinary. It was part of who he was. He did what he needed to do, and he was just did it without a tumult, so to speak. That sort of encapsulates it, I think.
Viva, you want to add something?
Make a big fuss.
If you're cutting out.
He's cut out a little bit.
I think it's just that the word, I think, is the sin.
Okay.
Sincerity. You can have people that take a big, not but there was something, a real model, if you spoke about his davening, just his learning, his interaction with people. He just lived by it. That I think that was the biggest thing to take from him, and it was without any there's a concept, nerven, no nerves, and no, it was just calm. It was done with joy, with love, with sincerity. He was a model in that sense.
I want to just add a little of the story, because you talked about it, I think before you talked about it, someone made a mistake on Torah, he would say the next word. Just again, not directly to your question, but it's a good thing. One of these things, he was known as an excellent Bal Tefillah and Bal Koira. So he shared with me, and I'm sure he shared with lots of people, about how he became such an unbelievable Bal Koira. He came from a little town in White Russia called Dokshitz, and his family was unbelievably poor. And when he was, I think, 14 or 15, he learned to lane. And he laned in a shul, and the Rav of the shul told him that if he comes on Shabbos morning, every Shabbos, and he gets tested on the laning for that Shabbos, the Rav will give him a glass of milk and a bulka, like a bun. So the incentive was unbelievable. I mean, the family was very, very, very poor. And he did this, I think, for 2 years. And as a result, he knew the Torah. I mean, he knew it by heart, really. I remember once I was, before I went to Australia as a bacher, as in yeshiva, I was home, I was sick for a while, and it was Pasha Zohar this time of the year. And so we made a minyan in the house. I could hear, well, for Shachris, I could hear Pasha Zohar, and he was there. He was staying at a house that Shabbos, and he was really older then, and it was hard for him to see and all that. And he was sitting. I think my father leaned, and he wasn't such a. He sometimes made one little mistake here and there. So if there was a mistake, he wasn't even looking at a chumash. As then, if there was a trop or a niggun or something that they paused on, he wasn't sure. He just said it the next one without even looking in the chumash. He would just say the next word.
Wow!
But it came from. I used to ask him, it wasn't natural. Like it came from work. He used to say, "You got to work hard." And like when he was a child, he worked hard for a few years.
So you touched upon his childhood for a moment there. I wonder if you could talk, if both of you could talk to a little about that. Did he ever? He had a very tough childhood and also a very interesting childhood. I mean, he grew up in a Hasidic home. He learned in more Litvisha yeshivas. He was sort of mixed sort of background that way. Grew up in a very, very poor home. Can you talk about that a little bit and how you think such a childhood affected him later and how that sort of made him who he was?
You know, I think it's interesting you say that it affected him. I think it's different. Nowadays, everything seems to affect everyone, which is true, but... He spoke, I mean, he did have a tough childhood, and it was tough living in those times. But he spoke always like with the most, when I grew up, I thought he had an amazing childhood, because he spoke lovingly about his childhood. I mean, he spoke about his town. When he would talk about Dokshis, it was like Durheim, you know, it was like the most beautiful thing, the stones, the shuls, I don't know. And he would talk about it. He so just to give you a bit of background, he did grow up in a Hasidic family. In fact, his connection to Hasidim goes back generations. His great-grandfather's grandfather was a Hasid of the Alter Rebbe. Dokshis was primarily a Hasidic town. He would speak often about the Rav in Dokshis, Reb Leib Shainen. He would tell stories about him and so on. But then his family was very, very poor. And actually, he wasn't, if I understand correctly, if everyone could correct me if I get the details wrong, but he wasn't actually going to go to yeshiva. He was going to go into work because there was much a problem, but he loved to learn. And then a friend of his told him about, no, come to yeshiva.
He worked as a
bookkeeper or something.
Right? He worked in the bank when he was bookkeeping, right? He was a bookkeeper in the bank in order to help with to support the family.
And then he kind of, with a friendship, with a friend's influence, I think he kind of almost ran away. He went to yeshiva. And he went to the Lithuanian yeshivas, which he loved, and he told many, many stories. So he had that very, and that's where he learned. And then later he married our grandmother, who was also from the same town that he came from, also from the Hasidic family. So he, he had these both very rich backgrounds. But he never spoke negatively about his childhood. I'm right. I don't think he ever. It's always very lovingly and about Dokshis.
Yeah, 100%. I have less memories about, I think it's again because of the age difference. And only now, of course, I regret so much that I didn't ask and learn more about him, his past and his childhood. So I don't really have memories of him telling a lot about his childhood. My brother Avishai, he who also used to spend those Shabbosim that you were talking about, he's got a lot more stories. But what your father was saying, which is so true, Zeta was a very positive person. And his outlook was for the good, for the positive. And that's why, even though when you think about it today, just what we mentioned here, he could have been so depressed and so sour and so see the negative. And he wasn't that way at all. He was a positive person. And that's why I very much connect to what your father says, that the kind of question to ask about Zeta and his time of when he was alive, there wasn't such an emphasis of what did it affect and what, on the contrary, you grew from challenges and you grew big and strong. And as a result, you even turned the lemon into lemonade. And that's what Zeta was all about, to make the best out of it and to see the good and the positive. So that's what I remember about any connection with his past.
I think that's right. You know, I mean, we're telling lots of stories, but I think stories also are important to learn from them. And I think 100%. I mean, this concept, you know, we call it Simchas HaChaim. He had an incredible Simchas HaChaim. He like loved discovering and exploring things, and as you say, turning challenges into positive things. And he would just marvel at everything new, and just never, we never heard negativity from him. It was just that joy of life was just incredible.
Well, so I guess just to end off, I will ask you one final question. It could be, you might have touched on this already before, but just sort of summarize a little bit. What do you, we'll say it in two ways. You can take whatever angle you want. What do you miss about him the most? And what do you, which part of your life today you think is influenced by him? Like, you know, sort of directly influenced by him and sort of shaped the way you think about life today?
Aviva, maybe you want to do it first this time? Come on, to end off. You go first this time.
You know what? It's so many things, Levi. It's his presence. You know, even though I said he wasn't one of those loud people or had to make waves, but Zeta had such a presence about him. It was enough. You know, even when I talk about it now, it reminds you of what we say in Anim Zmirot, Midei Dabri Bichvodecha. You just talk about him and he had an aura about him. He walked into a room, the room lit up.
Cutting out a little bit.
Think of automatically when he spoke to you, he went back to his mother tongue, which was Yiddish. So I took it as an opportunity to learn, and I even would leave him notes in Yiddish with tons of mistakes, and I knew that when Zeta would read them, he was going to start laughing. He'd never like correct my mistakes. And that feeling of you were important to him, that feeling of love, he just walked in. And I think that's one of the, I think about him or mention his name, that's one of the biggest things of Zeta, that he just, he had he was like a magnet. You just got attracted to him so strongly that it was something. Amazing.
Wow. I just add that a little bit. I mean, I reflect a lot of times, and I think a lot about him a lot. And I it's amazing. It's like, it's one of these things, like so many years, but you still miss him. But what I think about often is I went into the rabbinate, I suppose you could say. I was already married, and I was in yeshiva. I was teaching in a yeshiva. But I went in sort of more to like formal rabbinics after he passed away, really. And just towards the end of his life. And I often, again, like I said before, I don't think we'll ever reach his level, but there's so much to learn from him. And I often find myself asking myself the question, like, what do I think, in a situation that you will need to handle, or a conflict situation, or a potential problem that comes up in Rabbanus, I often think to myself, what would he say? Like, what would he do? What would he say? And I try to think sort of, I don't know if I get it right, he's, I think out of, so many people that had a sort of influence in my life, I think he's the person that continues to have an influence, because just, like sometimes I think to myself, he would do this, or he would go out of his way, or, he would want to make peace between two people because it was so important to him that there shouldn't be division and things like that. So I think that's the kind of impact, I think, an amazing impact.
Wow. Amazing. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Aviva, for taking time. It's good to see you again. As I said, hopefully we'll...
Levi, I just want something. I don't know if it's going to be possible. I just stepped aside here. I wanted to share. I don't know if people are going to be able to see it. I'm going to put something here on the screen.
I know the picture.
I don't know if people can see
it. Yeah, I can see it. You can see it.
It's That's a you, picture not, of Zeta benching me at my wedding yesterday. It was just yesterday, 24 years ago, that we celebrated our anniversary.
Mazel tov.
This picture, it used to be in my parents' house. Thank you. It was in my parents' house, and one evening they had company over of people that knew Zeta, and they saw this picture, and the lady was so touched by it, remembering Zeta. She actually made an oil painting out of that picture that hangs today in my parents' lounge. And that feeling of Zeta was not at his best already then, but the fact that we were zocher to have him at our wedding, and more than anything else, he should be well and healthy. Our oldest son, Yirmiyahu, is named after him, the first Yirmiyahu. He was born in the year that Zeta passed away. And so often I talk to him about him and try and tell him stories of exactly who it is that he's named after. It's to take a certain something very special into the world.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining us. This was a great conversation, and the Yehi Zichrei Baruch, his memory should be for a blessing, and we should all learn from him. We should all learn from what a special man he was. I mean, I grew up, as I said at the beginning, every second person that I met from South Africa was always saying, yeah, he married me, he was he did my bar mitzvah, he did my mas, he was just it's just overwhelming what an impact he had and how many people he knew. Thank you everyone for joining. Please God, next week, same link, we'll be doing another session of the Shmooze titled Judaism in Dubai, the Early Beginnings. A fascinating, we're going to interview people, most of which I don't know, but they have very interesting stories about how they were Jewish living in Dubai before the peace deal. In other words, before they were able to be public about it, and it should be fascinating. So stay tuned for that, and I hope everyone has a wonderful night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Aviva. See you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
It was a good memory session. Thank you for all those that made in the comments. It was a beautiful
comment. It's nice to see how many people you have there in Sydney that use Zeta.
It's
amazing. Anyone over the age of 60 is like, he married them, he knew them.
That is quite amazing. Wow. You have a recording of it?
Yeah, I recorded it, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I'd like your grandmother to see it also. I don't know, at the time when I spoke to her, we were going to try and see how she could hook up, but I didn't manage to make contact this morning.
We'll send her.
I think we have a recording. Send me also the recording, please, and I can get it to my parents also, because I don't know where, as I say, my father wasn't available, and I don't know how good my mother was this morning to watch it, but maybe on a better day, I'm sure she'd enjoy it. Good, Skaach, keep up your good work.
Olive Sir Stavis, and keep in touch.
Amen.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.